Welcome to this week's edition of Exporting Malta, where I, Monique Chambers, am joined by businesses that have sold their product and services overseas. Welcome to this week's Exporting Malta with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Brian Zarab Adami from CyberSift. That's quite hard to say.
Yeah.
So, CyberSift, what does... I'm not going to say it again. What do you do?
At CyberSift, basically what we do is we help companies secure their data, their networks, and their intellectual property.
Okay.
Basically, we are a cyber security company with our own tool set aimed at basically protecting companies online. Mainly.
So e-commerce type of sites?
To be honest, it's mainly companies that handle confidential data. So client personal data, maybe health records.
Okay.
So usual suspects are the banks, insurance companies, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
Healthcare companies, you know, we have hospitals as our clients, homes for the elderly, for example.
Okay, so it's all really personal data.
Yes, really personal data.
So how do you do that?
You
don't have to give me all the secrets, but you know.
So it's a tiered approach.
Mm-hmm.
There is actually a part of the discipline is called defense in depth, and that talks about layering on levels of security.
Mm-hmm.
At which point you get to the core, which is the data you want to protect. So think about a medieval castle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have your moat, you have your archers, you have your knights, and somewhere there are the crown jewels hidden away at the center of the castle. In our case, the crown jewels are the data.
Right. And so you provide all of those layers, or can people choose just to have some of those layers?
They choose what they like. In fact, normally we always start with a vulnerability test, where we pretend we are the bad guys,
mm-hmm.
and we try to breach their defenses.
So sort of ethical hacking.
It's exactly ethical hacking.
Ah. Okay, and then you sort of tell them where their vulnerabilities are, how you can patch them,
exactly.
And how you can save them from that.
Exactly.
So mass panic.
It's you know, when you have an accountant and an auditor,
mm-hmm.
normally they have to be a different person.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get your IT guys to check your own security because they've taken it for granted. So you get somebody external. And normally you see people pulling their hair out because, oh my, we've forgotten this bit or that bit, yeah?
So you do everything from the perimeter right through.
Yeah.
And so
what we do is we normally start with a test, and there are two types of tests. Vulnerability assessment is
mm-hmm.
checking what vulnerabilities exist on the systems. Maybe they're not updated, they lack a patch or something of that kind. Penetration test is literally, can I breach your defenses? Once we've established those, we help the client patch or close any loopholes they might have mm-hmm. in the system. We also use third-party tools to protect the different assets they might have, and eventually we monitor them.
Okay.
And our product is all about monitoring.
So seeing if anyone else is trying to get in and stopping
yes,
at that
yes,
point.
You basically come to a clean state, and once you have that clean state, then you are making sure you know the client is not breached from then on. The thing is that you can actually monitor manually. Keep in mind that all IT devices actually inform you of things going on in your network, right? They create what they call logs.
Okay.
Problem is that, let's say, a typical 200-person network would be generating 30 million of these events every month.
Wow.
Now, one or two of those lines means you're getting attacked. Try to find it. hence the tongue twister cyber sift, which is sifting through all that data to tell you, hey, you're being attacked.
And it just takes, really, I guess, one person not updating their settings or something for you to have a vulnerability.
It's the weakest chain in the link. And I can tell you the weakest chain is always the human. And normally it is the curiosity of that human, yeah.
What, messing about, looking at stuff they shouldn't look at, or just not being...
A typical scenario, a person on social media posting how much he likes theater. So I'm a malicious person. I'm going to send that person an email, obviously by looking at other people's email address from the same company. So it's name.surname@abc.com. Send him an email with a link telling him that there's a new theater show coming up. Obviously interested, he's going to click there. Once he's on that website, I own him. That downloads some malicious code, and the story goes.
And it's as simple as that?
As simple as that.
Wow.
Obviously, then you need some tech to try to protect from then on, you know. So there's a level of education and a level of tools that that needs to go into it.
Because you imagine most companies would have, you know, in their HR handbooks, a procedures that, you know, one does not do this, one does not do that.
Exactly.
But also, once, if even if they're using their own phone, if you're in the company using their Wi-Fi, isn't it the same thing?
Yeah, you need policies and procedures, but also a dose of common sense. Another typical case is HR department, for example. They have a careers page, or they're going to post in a job site or whatnot, that they're looking for a technical person with a specific skill set. I'm looking for a systems engineer who can work on ABC firewall and such a technology. Again, the malicious hacker there actually knows what he's up against. So you've given the game away, you know. So the common sense is not only, you know, having the governance training and the security awareness and all that, but it has to extend a little bit into your everyday doings, if you get me. There is another concept of attack surface.
Okay.
Attack surface is, so taking an analogy with a physical aspect, again, if I'm on stage and I'm making myself look big and I'm boring the audience and I ask them to throw tomatoes at me, they're probably going to hit me. But if I change my profile and I look very slim, there's a harder chance. So if I'm online and I am taking selfies and I'm in my server room with background of my equipment, for example, and the cameras are showing and whatnot, you know, I'm giving the game away. As well, you know.
Yeah.
So you really need to be cautious about what can be leveraged against you. That's the whole scope, you know. You want to have your defenses from an IT point of view in place, but it also extends to personal level things. For example, personal phone. I downloaded a game. This game is from some iffy developer. All well and good if I'm on the guest network. All of a sudden I go to head office, I'm on the corporate network, and by the way, my phone is making connections to some country, you know, some country I have no business in doing. These things have happened.
Okay.
There again, I've become, and it's very topical at the moment, a vector, no? A carrier of an infection.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
So that also happens in cyberland as well.
It's the perfect analogy.
But what can companies do then? What, obviously installing procedures, but then installing these softwares.
Yeah, there needs to be a marriage of both sides, yeah? First of all, you need to have a governance strategy. And you need to make sure that your tech is up to it, updated and so on. Obviously, proper training, that is regular, because the whole landscape is changing very, very fast at the same speed of every other IT technology. And using common sense to the approach. So in Maltese, they talk about, you know, the actual term is ahyar uff milli ah, they go. So better some pain than a world of pain later, if you get me, you know. And it's the same here, you know. I mean, obviously, who wants to have multi-factor authentication where all of a sudden I'm typing in a password and I need to receive a text message with another number to log in and all that? Obviously, more complicated, but you're making it harder for a would-be attacker, yeah?
So these attackers, so we all get those dodgy emails, you know, long-lost relation, or I'm from this bank of blah and you've got this money, you know. So we all get those, and there are people still stupid enough to click that link. But what's in it for a malicious hacker? What do they get out of attacking a company?
Various things, and it depends what they can leverage. So they have a tool set, right? So at the most basic level, you get what they call script kiddies. Script kiddies are very, let's say, amateurish people who are doing it out of kicks. You know, they download a tool and they want to see what they can break.
Okay.
Then you get people who are after discovery. In fact, the actual term hacker came from people who want to see how things work. They're not really after any personal gain. They just want to look in at the insides of a system to see what makes it tick. So there is that. But then there are actually people who do it for monetary gain, where they could send a malware to your network.
What's a malware?
Malware is a piece of software that is intended to do some bad. And, for example, it would encrypt all your files. So imagine switching on your laptop, and rather than seeing all your Word documents or whatnot, you're seeing a white icon. You click on it, up comes a pop-up. I've taken away all access to your data. Please send me such a, I don't know, one Bitcoin or whatever other cryptocurrency takes their fancy, for me to give you the code to decrypt all your data.
Right.
That has happened, if you remember.
Very recently there was something, yes.
Yeah, the UK NHS a couple of years ago was hacked in that way. On the other hand, some more organized entities are going after intellectual property. So you might have you might be a university or a research organization or even a company that is building something or has built something very interesting. You know, they actually try to take that data.
And if that's on someone's laptop who hasn't kept their thing updated, you've posted on LinkedIn who they are, presenting this paper or whatever, in 2 weeks somebody else can whip in and...
Exactly.
Wow.
And then you get the actual thieves, you know, who are after, as we had a very advertised case last year with a bank, you know, they actually breached the defenses of a bank and sent money to other entities and eventually tried to cash out. I believe they've been caught now, but obviously it was quite a big incident. No?
It's reputationally damaging, apart from the stopping the business being able to function. Yeah. So putting these systems in place, not just the policies, procedures, but putting these perimeter tests, perimeter, what do you call that thing?
Vulnerability assessment.
You start there. So how do you convince someone to do a vulnerability test, or do they come to you and say, ugh?
Well, so interestingly enough, online there is you're familiar with search engines,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
So you can go to a particular website, type in something that interests you, and up come results, and you're directed to other sites.
Mm-hmm.
There is actually one website called Shodan, which is a search engine for security.
Okay.
So if you go to shodan.io, for example, type Malta,
mm-hmm.
and this will give you a list. Up until last week, the list contained 65,000 entries of devices that are online in Malta that are hackable, that are exploitable.
Whoa.
And they can be webcams in your garage, they can be webcams in your office, they can be coffee machines, they can be air conditioning, they can be servers, laptops and whatnot. Home automation devices, you know, things that switch on.
Yeah.
And you can't actually go without the owner's permission and break into things and tell them, ah, by the way, you can be hacked. You know, that's obviously illegal. So you need to kind of let people know you exist.
Mm-hmm.
And if they feel that their digital assets are of certain importance, or maybe now, thank God, there are entities like the MFSA that is putting out guidelines for specific entities to get their defenses tested.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really do more than that, you know, beyond awareness or some kind of statutory requirement. Then it's up to the particular entity to do it.
So, do you find, though, when there's been a breach, even if it was, you know, an international company, that suddenly the phone starts ringing, they're like, oh, but we sort of need to check that. That could happen to us.
I don't want to sound like a burglar alarm salesman, but unfortunately, that particular breach that I mentioned was very good for business locally.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So.
And do you only sell locally? Because, you know, everybody's online with multiple devices, like you said, but...
No, so, first of all, the real cybersecurity community in Malta is very small.
Okay.
Because you have to have a specific skill set. You need to understand IT infrastructure, you need to understand software development, and you need to understand how to exploit both. Where traditionally you're either in the infrastructure space, or you're dealing with networks and cables and switches and this type of thing, or you build software.
Yep.
Now, this discipline requires expertise in both, and these people are hard to find. In fact, my colleague David, who is a engineer, electronics engineer by training, lives in Estonia. Because it's easier to find cybersecurity talent there, where NATO actually has its cybersecurity defense center for the region. And it is actually taught as a curriculum as a first degree.
Wow.
In Estonia. And they were one of the very first e-governments. Whereas in Malta, we still teach software development or IT infrastructure, that type of thing, you know. So
hasn't sort of moved on with the times yet.
It hasn't moved on. I mean, normally people do postgrad courses or, you know, industry courses and so on. So due to the expertise, some of the partner companies, as I told you, we use third-party tools, have asked us to help them in different countries. So we're talking to entities in Moscow, we're talking to clients in Kuwait, we've quoted in Italy just now, we started with another large group in Italy. So it's growing, so this team of 8 people is slowly expanding.
Uh-huh. So you don't physically, it's not a boxed product, I'm guessing, this is something you can download?
Well, you need to download, but you need to have the expertise to deploy it.
Okay.
It's very much like I told you, the alarm system. You know, if you don't put your sensors in the right place, you may as well have nothing. So you need to know how to set it up and how to collect. In fact, normally we start with the vulnerability assessment and the penetration test. And there we're already understanding the client's landscape. And from there we build, you know.
But even this sort of thing must be better for a company to even tell their shareholders or to tell, you know, their team in itself that they're, you know, everything's protected and your customers, that you have a certain level. I guess there's a badge rating almost.
There is also certification. There is the ISO 27001.
Okay.
Like there is the quality management, you know, an ISO, the 9000 and so on. There is actually a certification for security, which actually talks about policies and procedures, but then ensuring that you have those implemented, and there is regular testing of the whole setup.
So it's not you do it once and I'll just leave it for a year, because, like you said, things change as code changes, as new things come out. And as, you know, I remember there was something recently, one of these hacks that went around where people were inviting, but the email header was one of your passwords.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it might be a low-level password, but it would come in, and then it would threaten to show it said something about it would open the camera on your machine, watching you watching porn, and it would share this with everybody. I think how nasty people are, you know. But there would have been people that fell for that.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Because now that's another part of it. It's called social engineering,
right,
where they're kind of faking it.
But they're faking it with your password. They've got your password, so they've got into something.
But they wouldn't have actually got into something. Basically, as you know, there have been password leaks in the past. And these are bought, sold online in these dark nets and whatever. And it could be a password that you may have used, I don't know, 10 years ago. And it might look familiar. So it's, if I want to trick you into something, it already makes more sense to send you an email saying, listen, I have one of your passwords, you know. So you say, oh, no, you know, kind of, this isn't generic. They're a bit more specific here. But still, I mean, obviously, personally, again, common sense, you should be changing your passwords frequently. And today, even basic social media sites allow you to have two-factor authentication, where you either need to have an authenticator app, which generates a random number, which you have to type in addition to your password, or you receive a text. So if you get breached, it's because you either believe that that information is not critical for you, and it can be just a nuisance if somebody takes over your social media persona, or you've been careless.
So there's an onus, like you said at the beginning, that it's actually the human is the weakest link.
Yes.
So in Zelda software, you can download expertly, you can put your policies and procedures into place. So us stupid humans, we need to regularly change our passwords.
Yep.
Regularly, or make sure that we're on top of our updates. I know I'm not, because you always have to, you know, you have to leave your phone on charge over the plugged in when and that never seems to happen.
Yeah.
And so is there anything else that the human can do outside of a business?
Well, the same thing with the antivirus, you know, if you are buying your antivirus for home from a unknown company. And that means that they're probably not that large, they probably don't have the expertise you need, and so on. So, as much as possible, you know, you should look at ratings, reviews, and so on. It's like buying a car kind of thing. You want to make sure that you're buying a good product. Having said that, for the in the corporate world, it hasn't really come into the home space, the residential space. There is now this concept of using artificial intelligence and machine learning to augment the human being, you know. So if the desktop antivirus in a company, in a bank, realizes that the calculator is trying to connect to the internet or notepad, it will go, hey, what's going on here? Anomalous behavior. And it would kill that process and not allow it to happen.
Okay.
Nirvana would be that these tools eventually reach, and they will eventually reach the home, but we're not there yet.
Not there yet. And so how are you getting into companies? Because so they, you know, you can't sort of ethically hack them and say, hey, you've got a problem. And then companies, you know, in places like Russia, in places like, you know, how are you getting their attention from our tiny little rock?
So, first of all, we do use social media to promote ourselves, but in a very subtle way, so you can't go and say, listen, this is my tech, because you're giving it away. And we've had requests from seemingly dodgy people who want to have a demo, and you were, how come? You're not, you know, you wouldn't really need it. So it's online. The other one, the best one, is client referral.
Okay.
And the third one is where, as my colleague calls it, we're sitting on the shoulders of giants. So we've partnered with two companies, both originally from Israel, who are
the security
experts.
Yep.
And they appreciated what we're doing for them in Malta. And they say, oh, we don't have such talent in our other partnerships abroad. And they get a particularly difficult case, and they say, would you guys be interested in handling it? You know? So
that kind of thing helps you get there. And getting their attention was from sales that you'd already initiated.
Of course, at the end of the day, it's a numbers game, so everybody wants to sell something.
But what's any other tips you can pass on to corporates or individuals about securing? Because we sort of mentioned briefly about phones on Wi-Fi. Is there a, you know, should companies have two sets of Wi-Fi so that your work stuff is on one thing and maybe your fun stuff is done on
I mean, for sure, the personal mobile phone is a guest at the company. Mm-hmm. It should not be allowed on the corporate network,
right,
even if it is owned by the CEO.
Okay.
Very sorry.
He's probably the most...
Again, to attack surface. You know, you don't... I mean, imagine me asking the CEO of a company, listen, you can't post that on social media because you're giving stuff away. So at very least, the device, if it is not managed by the internal team, and if it's his personal phone, whoever the employee is, sits on the guest. Where all that phone will get is access to the internet and out it goes. Nothing to do with the internal stuff.
Right.
So I would say the policies, other than that, understand your landscape, you know, understand that mobile phones today are extremely powerful machines, you know, very fast, very powerful.
Yeah.
And they can create havoc in seconds if they are used by the correct malicious person. So,
and that's if people are working from home, working on the bus, working on the train, they're carrying that thing with them.
Yes.
So,
and beyond that slick user interface, you know, the really nice graphics and all that, if you actually had to root that phone, you're looking at a basic operating system just like any other computer, just n times faster.
Something you guys can protect as well.
We monitor for and we can protect the intrusions.
Fantastic. So I've been talking to Brian Zarb-Adami from CyberSift. I think we're all going to be looking at your website now.
Great.
Thank you very much for joining me.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to this week's edition of Exporting Malta, produced by me, Monique Chambers, with technical assistance from Carmela Grech and Redent Abdillah. This show is aired every Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. and repeated on Fridays at 7:30 p.m. here on Campus FM.